Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only. Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Oh, and welcome to Two Words Wolves Pod. I'm Ryan Eichten. Andrew Carlson will be joining me later, but for now, just me. Sure, y'all, you guys watched it. Wolves fall 118-103 to the Thunder. Solid fourth quarter from the group, but ultimately not. I don't think the final score is representative of what that game was, and what I felt was almost a carbon copy of what we saw in game one. We're gonna be here for a little bit tonight talking about both games. Didn't have a show after the first game, but wanted to come on tonight and kind of recap the first two games of this series. Thought the Wolves played especially well in the first half. Very similar to game one. Thought they played very well in that second half, and both times it just kind of felt like the margin should be more in the Wolves' favor than it was. They were up by 4 points at the end of the first half of game one, and they were down by 8 at the end of the first half of game two. Looking at it, they got outscored 29-25 exactly in both the first and second quarter tonight. Thought the Wolves played especially well in that first half, enough to take a lead against the Thunder, and just one of the biggest things, OKC hit a ton of tough shots in the first half. And then what we saw in the third quarter was the exact same thing as we saw in the third quarter of game one, and really what the Thunder have done this entire season, and they just overwhelmed the Wolves. 35-21 in that quarter doesn't do justice to how overwhelming the Thunder were, and really just leaves you wondering how far the Wolves are from winning a series against a team like this. I'm not going to do the full season retrospective, not even going to say this series is over, because I don't think it is. Obviously, the chances of winning are slim, but I'm not the type to kind of totally give up on a series, even if they're... I think the Wolves have a better chance of winning this than they did just because they got home games left than they did after two games of Dallas, and that's kind of the main... If you want to be negative, that's the main thing, is they've made the Western Conference Finals twice in the past 2 years. That's a really impressive feat. Not a lot of teams do that. Most teams have not done that in their history, have made the Final Four back-to-back seasons, but now they're down 0-2 for the second straight year in the West Finals. And we'll leave the big picture thoughts for the offseason, what should they do about that. But for the offseason, we're going to kind of focus on what happened in this game and what happened in these first two. Just trying to sift through my thoughts. I thought the biggest thing, just thinking about what were the advantages the Wolves potentially had or the negatives that Oklahoma City Thunder had. And all season was kind of like, obviously Shea is amazing. He was awarded MVP yesterday, but they don't really have like a true second scorer next to him. And that showed up in the Denver series. Jalen Williams was very up and down offensively in that series, and tonight he was just awesome. I'm not even sure what the Wolves could do about the performance Jalen Williams had in this game. He took a lot of tough shots and made a lot of tough shots. Maybe they're not tough because these are the type of shots he can hit, but man, they hit a lot of contested mid-range shots in that first half. And obviously when Shea does that, you tip your cap to him, and or you try to force him off those spots that he's so good at, but If Jalen Williams is going to hit those shots, I'm not sure where the path is for the Wolves to win this series. And that is kind of the overarching thought I had about this series. I'm going to go over all the places where I'm like, this is something that the Thunder are overperforming or the Wolves are underperforming based on what we would have thought coming into the series. And given how good the Thunder are as a baseline, like them losing this type of stuff is just killer for the Wolves. A second player going off like Jalen Williams did is the first one. We saw the Wolves start to double Shea, hard double Shea, and the Thunder knocked down a few open shots. And that's just, it's kind of, if Shea's going to be able to make the right pass and the Wolves are going to try to force it into other players' hands, if those guys are going to hit shots, and it's going to be really tough for the Wolves to win this series. Another one, rebounding. The Wolves won the rebounding battle. They had an extra 4 offensive rebounds, but second chance points were still in the favor of the Thunder, 14-12. And maybe that has more to do with the shooting percentages than anything else. But the Wolves just, that's got to be a place that the Wolves dominate. If they want to win this series, they got to dominate on the glass. We saw it at points in the Lakers series. We never saw it really during the Warriors series. And we have not seen it through 2 games. Through this series, I'm going to go talk about each individual player a bit later, but obviously Rudy is the first place you look at for that. Just has not been a big enough factor in the series. Turnovers, this one has probably gone right about where you'd expect. The Wolves were always going to need to limit turnovers. They had 14 tonight. That's not awful, but it led to a bunch of points off turnovers, 22 points off turnovers for the Thunder, compared to 10 for the Wolves. Thunder only turned it over 8 times, 2 of which are shot clock violations. The Wolves didn't have a ton of live ball turnovers, honestly. A lot of their turnovers were dead balls. So 9 live ball turnovers for the Wolves. 22 points on off of 9 live ball turnovers is just too many. So Wolves got to do a better job with transition defense. Transition offense, another place the Wolves just have not been good enough. Need to really all season have been a very inefficient fast court team. Obviously, the Thunder are going to beat you up in that area, but Wolves have to do a better job pushing the ball when they can. Don't let this Thunder defense set up on you, because the Wolves have struggled to score against it through 2 games. And when you do, you can't turn the ball over when you push the ball, and they've just done none of that. It's all kind of, none of that has gone right. And then the biggest thing, I know it's really hard to talk about, but you just gotta make shots. They're not making shots. And obviously the Thunder deserve a ton of credit for that. The defense is the biggest reason why the Wolves are missing shots. But another 11 of 39 from 3. How different is this game if that's 15 of 39? Let's see if I can do quick math there. 15 of 39 is 38%. So what you'd expect. The Wolves had an extra 12 points from 3. Who knows what that limits the Thunder on defense based on the rebounds. I just think that if the Wolves are going to win both games at Target Center or get back into the series or whatever, they just got to make shots. That's like the first point. And that, to me, that signals that the Thunder are gigantic favorites to win this series now, because if that's like the main, just make shots, if that's just the main, like the main counterpoint you have, you're probably in a tough spot. And the Wolves are. And then maybe just overall sloppiness, just being loose with the ball, just not being effective enough, not playing well enough. It's a weird thing to harp on, but like, they just got to play better. They just got to make more shots. And even if they do, maybe that won't be enough. It may not be, but they're just not even giving themselves a chance with the way they're playing. Overall, offense was, I guess, better tonight. Maybe not, but I thought the defense, and again, Oklahoma City deserves a ton of credit. They were carving up the Wolves, hitting tough shots, generating open shots. The Wolves just didn't do enough defensively to stop them. All right, let's go kind of down the list. I'll start with the top players for the Wolves and go down the list. Anthony Edwards thought he had a solid enough game. It's hard to, guy has 32 points on 26 shots. It's hard to really, ultimately, he was their best player tonight. So it's hard to, had 6 assists and 0 turnovers. That's huge. 9 rebounds. Thought Ant was great tonight. Unfortunately, the OKC best play, OKC on the other end was, Shea was just better than him. Maybe that's not Ant's fault. That's as much about the defense and the, but ultimately I just kind of felt like if the Wolves were going to win this series, Ant had to, at the very least, play up to Shea's level and maybe out-duel him in this series. And through 2 games, Shea has been their better player. It's hard to overcome any series that you don't have the best player. But when we, what we've clearly seen is obviously Oklahoma City has by far the better supporting cast. So, I mean, it's just death. Like if you, it's death if you don't have the best, you know, the best supporting cast and you don't have the best player. You're looking at a short series in that sense. So somewhere we gotta, either Ant's gotta play up to Shea's level or some of the Wolves role players have to step up and start playing better, because otherwise it's hard to imagine this series coming back to Minnesota for game 6. I do feel confident that the Wolves will be able to win 2 of the next 3. I honestly do. I think this team has shown enough to feel good about that, but winning 4 out of 5 to take this series is obviously it's a really tall task. On defense, just Ant probably wasn't good enough. It's always hard to tell watching live if about defense. So probably have to go back and watch that. But everyone put out the photo of him looking sternly, and it's good for social media, but I don't think he, I don't know. It's hard to, I'm juggling with, like, I thought he played really well tonight. The stats look great, but fair or not, and I would probably call this unfair, they need him to go supernova. They need him to go just absolutely bonkers in this series to win. And he can't, and the problem with that is he can't just like start barreling into people or just start like going ham, because it's impossible to do that against the Thunder defense. Like if you just force it, it's going to lead to turnovers. He had 0 turnovers tonight. If you'd have told me he scored 32 points, 6 assists, 9 rebounds, and 0 turnovers, I would think the Wolves had a shot to win this game. But they didn't. 1 of 9 for 3 is tough. Weren't fantastic looks, but he's been knocking down tough shots all year, so would have liked to see more of those go down. But I just think, defensively they need a bit more connected Anthony Edwards to win this series. They need him to be some sort of lockdown defender, because that's the biggest thing I think that stands out with Oklahoma City in the first couple of series. I mean, the Lakers series especially. The Wolves had a lot of weak links defensively to attack. They had like Luka or Reeves in the first series, and even with the Warriors playing shorthanded, even as a good defense, they didn't have like a rim protector or a true Anthony Edwards stopper. So Ant was able to get to the rim fairly easily. OKC does not have a weak link defensively. They had 4 guys either named all defense teams or at least get votes. The weakest defender is probably SGA, and that's all probably mostly because he's doing so much on offense, he can't be their best defender. And it also says more about the rest of the team, because SGA got all defense votes. He's a good defender. There's no one to attack. There's no weak link. And obviously their bench, they played 5 guys off the bench, really just 7 guys, with Aaron Wiggins playing 10, Isaiah Joe playing 3 minutes, and Kenrich Williams playing about a minute and a half. None of those guys are weak links defensively. And so there's nowhere for Ant to get switched on. It's just such a different series than the previous series. And it's just a taller task. I don't think, if we want to do the big picture game, I don't think there's any shame in losing this series. Yes, would we have liked to see some better play? Or if this thing does continue to trend like it has. Would we like to be a bit closer? Yeah, but I've come around on this Oklahoma City team just being extremely good, championship ready. I did not feel like that really up until game four and five of the Denver series, when they're down in both games and they come back and take a stranglehold. That was the biggest thing for me with OKC, was just like the mental toughness, the vets. I just kind of didn't feel like they had enough of those guys. And they've so far been extremely good and been able to be the professional team. And that's what we've seen. They've just been the more mentally prepared team, the more physical team, for better or for worse, the more connected team, really just every area. There's no signs that this team is a young team. Honestly, the Wolves, with the ones who have vets, have been the ones that have shown signs of being not ready for the moment. And maybe that'll change at Target Center. And that's really the only reason I'm holding out some level of hope for the series, is just that we haven't played at Target Center yet. The Wolves have been fairly good at Target Center in this postseason. We got to at least give them a chance to get back home and see what they can change. I do think that the Wolves need to make some sort of major change to their game plan. They got to, I think, hard double Shea Moore. And if the OKC role players hit shots, then that might just have to be what it is, because I don't think their game plan the first two games has been close to working well enough. Because as much as I want to come here and say, oh, they just got to make shots and they'll have a chance, I don't think that's a realistic way to win this series. Because, yeah, I do think they can start to hit shots and start to win games. I don't think that that's the only adjustment you need to make to win four out of the next five to win this series. So yeah, let's keep going with talking about all the players. Rough Julius Randle game. He's 2 for 11 from the field, 0 of 3 from three. Just had a great first half of game one, and really has been non-existent ever since then. Has not been able to get the bully ball game going. 0 assists, or excuse me, I'm looking at it wrong. 5 assists, 4 turnovers, 5 rebounds. Just it's been closer to the bad Julius Randle in this series. They weren't able to get him the ball, and to me, I almost didn't have a huge problem with it, because I just felt like OKC has answers for everything that he's trying to do. The post-ups are just not working. They just aren't. They have so many good defenders to run at Julius and to keep him contained. So many of these post-ups are just ending in turnovers. To me, the post-ups that were working with Ant was the only guy posting up that was finding plays, but I just don't think the Randle post-ups are going to be that profitable in this series. It's a tough matchup for him, and he needs to play better, and they need to put him in better spots, but I'm not sure that this is going to be the series for him. Speaking of not series for him, Rudy Gobert. This is just the classic, the ultimate Rudy Gobert conundrum, and it shines every time you get this far in the playoffs with him. Everyone wants to point out his defense for whatever reason. I continue to think his defense is not at all the problem with what Rudy's going on. He's a fantastic defender. He can defend pretty much any sort of action. With any big, if you try to get any rim protecting big, getting them away from the rim is the goal, and that's how you can find success against the 4-time defensive player of the year. But ultimately, the defensive end of the court is not the problem. It's really on offense, and it's becoming such an issue, especially with a team like OKC. They're just packing the paint, and Rudy just makes it so easy on them to do so. He scores 5 points, has a putback or two, 9 rebounds. Just thought there's too many rebounds that he wasn't able to corral. Just has not been a force. And I wonder if Rudy Gobert, starting center on a championship team, the margin of error is just so small. And if you're going to do it, you need to have him generating offense, or at least just not being a liability And he started to show that down the stretch of the regular season and just has not shown it very much at all. I mean, if we could get that Laker game from him, that game five Laker game from him every game, that's what they need from him to win the series. And I just, it's hard to see it and it's in there. But I don't think taking him off the court is the answer either, because they can't defend well enough with him on the bench. And that's just such a key, it's just the classic Rudy Gobert conundrum. You take him off the floor and you're not good enough defensively. And with him on the floor, you're not good enough offensively. So I don't know what you do there, because as I say, you can't bench him. And stands to reason that sending him off in the offseason would also not be the right move, because a big reason the Wolves are even where they got, the Wolves are not in the Western Conference Finals at all without Rudy Gobert. But that's an offseason topic. If they want to try to move off of Rudy, they're going to need to find some defense elsewhere, because this defense is not good enough without Rudy. Another player that's just kind of it's an interesting conundrum is Mike Conley, who actually played pretty well. The Wolves, with Mike on the bench, have not been able to generate nearly good enough offense. Mike finishes a plus 14 in this game, meaning the 20 minutes he sat, the Wolves lost those minutes by 29. I mean, if you're losing more than a point a minute, you're on pace to lose by 50 plus. Like, they got just torched in the Mike on the bench minutes, which speaks to the regular season when people wanted Mike out of the rotation. The numbers aren't going to fly off the page for Mike, but the Wolves offense, the only spurts of good offense they had in this game were with Mike playing well. So it's hard to, but on the flip side, on the defensive end, they were attacking Mike like all they do. Mike defends well for his size, but he's just like physicality wise outmatched. So with Mike, it's hard to defend with him on the court right now, and it's almost impossible to play offense with him off the court. And with Rudy, it's the exact opposite. And it just kind of feels like when the Wolves are good, those two aspects are balancing each other out. The Mike offense is balancing out the brutal Rudy offense, and Rudy's defense is covering up for Mike's lack of size and physicality on defense. And this series has just been the opposite, where it just feels like both of those holes, they're not scoring enough because of Rudy, and they're not defending well enough, in part due to Mike. So I don't know if they got to go away from Rudy. That seems tough. And going away from the one player that had a great plus minus in this game seems even worse. So I don't know. It's going to be, I'm struggling to find lineup answers in that sense. It's going to be up to Finch to kind of figure that out. That'll be the goal of the next 2 days. If they can win game three, then you're at least somewhat back in the series. I guess you probably got to win game four too, because coming back from down 3-1 with two of those games in OKC feels like an impossible task, but winning two straight after getting walloped also feels like a tall task. Last starter, Jaden McDaniels. Offensively, he was fairly solid. 8 of 15, 4 of 8. But just not quite impactful enough on Shea defensively. Certainly, I think they'll try to mix up what they're doing with their coverages on Shea. I just think fouls are such a big part of Jaden's success. When he's able to get away from fouls, he's a fantastic player. And when the fouls are coming, it's really tough. The other part of Jaden is he's a super emotional player. And that's really a good thing for most of the time. It fuels him in the trash talking and everything he does out there on the court. I know people don't see it because he looks like he's got the stone face and the classic meme with Jaden happy, and he's just completely still. He said one time in the locker room, "Well, that's just because you guys don't see me at home." So he is a very emotional player, and with Shea and the fouling and the grifting, if you want to call it that, it's just a tough series for Jaden defensively. And we saw it on that play where he gets the technical or the flagrant one, where Shea hooks him twice. I think if you want to go in on Jaden, hey Andrew, what's up?
Ryan, tough one.
Yeah. I was just I'm going down the list of players, and I've gotten to all the starters but Jaden. So I was going in, not going to do the referee rant.
Yep.
But Jaden is clearly getting frustrated by the SGA of it all. The ethical Hooper of it all. He on the play where he gets the flagrant, Shea hooks him twice. I completely understand why he's frustrated by that play. You see him turn to the ref and kind of in classic Jaden fashion pushes SGA on that play. As an emotional person, I don't hate it, and even as like a, it didn't affect the outcome of the game, so whatever. But clearly Jaden's emotions are getting the best of him in that sense, and generally emotional Jaden is good Jaden. But in this case, it's not. And I worry that the foul trouble of it all is really just not letting him thrive on defense.
Yeah. He's getting worn down clearly. And, you know, frankly, if I'm Jaden McDaniels at this point in time, my frustrations are pretty warranted. I mean, I think that you're one of, at least in game two, you're frankly one of the only players that showed up. And I know you've maybe gone down the starter list, but, I mean, at this point in time, the center that you're playing next to in Rudy Gobert has been completely ineffective in a series that he's needed to be effective in. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't have this from Rudy in this series, especially when you're, you know, you've lost both games now by 10 plus points. You know, he needs to be a stabilizing force when he comes in the game. And frankly, at this point, it hasn't happened. And when you're Jaden, like Shea's getting by you a little bit. He might be getting the best of you. He might be getting those hooks. But during the season, 9 times out of 10, Rudy's behind you to help with that. And in this series, he's getting tied up. And when that shot is going up and maybe you force the first miss, he's not there to get the rebound. And so if I'm Jaden, like, at this point, man, screw it. Like I'm going to throw him to the ground and I'm going to just prove a point. And frankly, at this point in time, like I'm kind of on the side that this maybe should have happened in game one.
I mean, it did. Ant threw a ball at him in the first quarter.
And I think it should have been a little bit more, like, I think it should have, like, this type of physical foul should have happened in game one, where you have to set a tone for the series, man. And you're coming back home to Minneapolis now down 0-2. And it's one of those things where if you're not showing that, yes, you're a little bit frustrated, but two, you're sending a message to the people behind you of, I need a little bit of help here. Like, I can't, like, yes, Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, like, for whatever you want to say, yes, he might be a free throw merchant. He might, you know, dive after whatever contact he might draw. I need some help getting the rebound after the shot goes up. And I need some help a little bit on the contest if he does maybe get by me. Because the Wolves do a really, as Chris Finch has said all season, they've done a great job forcing the first miss. But once again, these second chance points, it's like the second chance points disparity was 2 points tonight. It was 14-12. But it felt like Oklahoma City's 14 carried so much more gravity tonight than the Wolves 12 did. And those are killers. And Jaden's 22 points. I believe he had 22 points. It was good. Like, but at the end of the day, his frustrations are warranted, man. Like, I don't hold it against him. Like, his temper maybe got the best of him there in the fourth quarter, but I'm not gonna sit here and say that what he did was completely wrong or incorrect.
Yeah, I guess if we wanted, it feels disingenuous not to at least touch on the Shea free throw thing. Personally, I don't think the officials are the reason the Wolves are down 2-0. I don't think the Wolves eat, but specifically the way Shea gets to the line, I'm not even going to go down if they are fouls or not. Personally, some of them are, some of them aren't. He does a good job of accentuating what is and what's not. But if someone can't at least understand why opposing fans and opposing players aren't pissed, you're just not, I don't think you're living in the same reality I am. It's very easy to understand why it's frustrating. They play an extremely physical style of defense, and then Shea gets like a ticky-tack rule book. I don't understand why those things are. I thought there was a couple like missed layups that the Wolves were fouled on early in the game. I don't get it. It's not worth talking about it beyond that, to be honest, because it's not the reason the Wolves are losing the game. I mean, free throws are the reason they're losing the game. The OKC was 29th in free throw differential because of the physical style they play with. They're kind of the reason why they are okay with that is because they feel like the points off turnovers they generate far outweighs the free throws they give up. And the Wolves only had two more free throw attempts in this game. And they shot fewer free throws in game one. That's just death. You have to at least have an advantage in the free throw line. Again, if you want to blame the officials for that, great. I would probably maybe point more towards the three-point attempts, although the Wolves only had six more tonight. Or the Wolves just got to do a better job getting to the free throw line. And honestly, the fact that they had like half of their free throws in the second half, they had 25 free throws in the second half and only one in the first half. So they just got to get to the line better. I do think that they did a better job like getting into the paint and like probing the defense a little bit better. I thought their three-point attempts were better tonight, but they still didn't go in. And I know it, I already said this, but I'll have you touch on it. I know it sounds like lame analysis, but the way the Wolves are shooting, they've just not given themselves any chance to win any series in the this far in the playoffs. And so in the first, I do think there's obviously, the Thunder deserve a ton of credit for the reason. It's not just in a vacuum the Wolves are missing these shots. But the Wolves are missing some wide open ones too. And I bet you when the tracking data comes out, it's going to say the Wolves underperformed their shot chart again. And I don't know what to do about that, because as much as the Thunder are forcing it, I don't think that they're the only reason why the Wolves are. I just think it's bad luck or variance or shot making skill. I don't know.
Sure. At 100%. This is the analysis you come to this live stream for, is that the Wolves just have to play better at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. I mean, in order to be a playoff team that makes the NBA finals, you need one bench player at minimum to step up and be a hero that helps support your top two options. And the Wolves have not had that. And it has been pretty much by a long shot, unapparent. Whether it's shooting the basketball, whether it's playing defense. And to your point, Ryan, like I'm sitting there watching the game with a couple of friends tonight, and it's the third quarter. It even gets to the fourth quarter in garbage time, and they're getting it down to 10 points. And it's like, where was this offense in the first two quarters? I mean, you're getting to the basket with relative ease. Maybe the Thunder have let off the gas a little bit, but the players who you want to get to the paint and score the basketball are now getting to the paint. It's Naz Reid. He's being more deliberate. It's Ant. He's being more deliberate. It's Jaden. He's being more deliberate. Like, Nikhil is being more deliberate. Like, where did we lose our way in the first couple quarters to where this was not the offensive strategy? And again, maybe to OKC's credit, they're bearing down a little bit more and getting into their stance a little bit more. But at the end of the day, I just don't really buy that. Like, the Wolves got here, and I've tweeted this out multiple times, and whether it's on my own personal account or whether it's the Canis account, it's like, your bench is elite. You have three pieces that should be starters on other NBA rosters, or can be starters on other NBA rosters. It's been a major reason as to why you are here. And the fact that it has folded in a series where it's really two similar teams. I mean, two teams who make a lot of their hay on defense. Maybe OKC a little bit more on the defensive side, the Wolves a little bit more on the offensive side, whatever it may be. They have eight guys who can start on NBA rosters. And these are two teams who, under the new CBA, are built to win championships. Like, this is the formula. You have eight guys who are starters who can win, who can help you win games. And so far, OKC's bench has shown up more so than the Wolves bench has. And for whatever reason, whether it's former Sixth Man of the Year Naz Reid going 3 of 8 again tonight, and Dante, I think, again went 3 of 8. You know, like, Dante has to have a 20-point night one night. Nas has to have a 20-point night. Like, these are guys who need to step up and play better. Like, at the end of the day, like, that, like, it sounds stupid and it sounds like a bullshit reason, but at the end of the day, like, you just have to play better. You really do. Yeah. Like, you have to play better. You have to be more aggressive. You can't be standoffish on offense. And Julius going 2 for 11 tonight. Yeah, sure. That was a factor. Like, maybe. But you have a good enough roster from 1 through 8 to be able to pick that up and bring it into the fourth quarter and be in a position to either bring the game to a tie or be able to close the game out. I thought in game 1, if you make 3 more threes within the first 3 quarters, you're in a position to close the game out in the fourth quarter. You know, tonight, if you make 2 more shots in the fourth quarter, you're in a position to come back and crawl yourself back into this game. It really is in these series a matter of just a couple going down.
Yeah, I said I thought both first half they played have been very, very good. And both times I thought the margin should have been more in the Wolves' favor. Both times. And then basically the same carbon copy third quarter where they just get overwhelmed. And that's been
35-21.
Yeah.
Third quarter.
It was worse than that. I just think that, I don't know, like, it makes sense why you get overwhelmed by the OKC defense. It's not just the best in the league. It might be the best in a decade or plus or more. I know we kind of said that about the Wolves defense last year, and it's true, but the Wolves last year and the Thunder have even topped it this year, are two of the better defenses of this last era of the NBA. And the Wolves are just clearly getting flustered by it. Nas and Dante. Nikhil had a solid enough game tonight, but didn't really guard his cousin all that well. Again, some of the foul calls on Nikhil were annoying. But yeah, Nas and Dante have just been, aside from a couple quarters from Nas, both of those guys this entire playoff run have been pretty putrid. It makes me wonder what kind of contract Nas will get this offseason.
Nas has played his way out of a little bit of cash, that's for sure.
Yeah, and obviously Julius has done the opposite, but
I know Dane's mentioned it on his pod a little bit too, but I think the questions about Rudy have to be asked as well. I think that This is a series where you have to point at Rudy a little bit. I mean, there's so many times where Rudy was on the floor tonight. I mean, this is never going to show up in the box score, just on the straight up rebounding count of things. I'm just going to double check and I mean, maybe my cause is substantiated. Maybe it's not. It might just be more of an eye test thing. I mean, OKC out rebounds you 42-41. It's not, but it's the gravity of some of the offensive rebounds that OKC was able to get with Rudy on the floor tonight. And it begs the question of how effective can Rudy Gobert really be in a playoff series against another dive big like Isaiah Hartenstein. Because tonight, I think was a little bit of an indictment on where that's going. I mean, I think game 1, you can say, okay, I mean, he made some really good defensive plays in the second and third quarter, and kept the Wolves in the game for a lot of the time. I think in obviously the Lakers series, you had the closeout game, the 27-24. I think too, in Golden State, like he had his moments. It didn't necessarily appear in the box score, but he was effective defensively. But I think this is the series where you really have to say, like, at what point in time is Rudy Gobert a floor raiser and a ceiling holder? Certainly a floor raiser where you make back-to-back Western Conference Finals, certainly an elevator of the franchise, and he's gotten you to a certain point with the defense that's been around him. But there were too many times tonight where back-breaking offensive rebounds went to Oklahoma City with him on the floor, and that just... Yeah. Rudy's MO is that can happen every once in a while, but it can't happen too many times. And I think whether it was the first half or the second half, especially crawling back in the game too, you just had too many of those. It's to make it worth the while. And that was, I think, a big reason as to why they maybe coughed up what could have been a little bit of a comeback and a little bit more of an interesting game down the stretch, especially in the fourth quarter when you pull it to 10 points. It's just too many backbreakers. And credit to the Thunder. You know, it's just as much of a Wolves minus as it is a Thunder plus when you make a little bit of a run. And I, you know, I'm sitting there the whole time. I'm like, I'm just waiting for the Wolves 7-0 run. Just like one 7-0 run. Like just bring it to within 6 points, you know, within 5 minutes. Like just one 7-0 run. But the Thunder make winning plays. That's just what they do. And whether it's overwhelming the Wolves front court or being able to stop the backcourt from getting in the paint, they've been able to do it all series. And if the Wolves don't take two straight here in Minneapolis, then it's curtains.
Yeah, it's a classic Rudy Gobert conundrum where it's just so dumb that people like attack his defense because it's been phenomenal the all series. But their offense suffers with him on the court, especially against this OKC defense that is just packing the paint.
You can't take him
off the court because they can't defend with him off the court. So what do you do? I mean, do you trade him? Because that's the same conundrum. The Wolves are not good enough defensively with Rudy Gobert off the court. They're just not. So you got to bring in someone to defend. Well, trust me, it's harder to find rim protectors that also space the floor. OKC's got two of them, it seems like. Would love if Rudy could hit the same little push shot that Hartenstein has.
Yep.
But the rebounding is just not good enough from him. If the Wolves would be tied 1-1 if they could get that Lakers game five from Rudy every single game. I don't know where that came from, and it was the only time he's played like that this entire postseason. If they're gonna win the title with Rudy Gobert on a roster, or at least as like the starting center on a roster, you're gonna need that game from him like multiple times in a playoff series of this caliber. And
yes.
Instead of that, they haven't even gotten it multiple times this whole run. And so I don't know.
They've gotten it once. They got it once. And
he's had other fine enough games, but like, he hasn't been good enough. I mean, that's probably the story of most of the roster, but just hasn't been good enough.
You just look at individual rebounding, right? I mean, let's look at Oklahoma City for a second. Like Jalen Williams, he has 10 rebounds. Like the Wolves, first of all, didn't have a single player that hit double digits in terms of rebounds. Jalen Williams has 10. Isaiah Hartenstein has 8.
He was so good, man. Jalen Williams.
He's been awesome all series.
He was the reason while watching the Denver series, I felt good about Minnesota's chances in a series like this. And he's been the reason why they have had no shot in these first two games. He hit so many tough shots. It's tough watching Jalen Williams hit like step back long twos over defenders and then watch the Wolves brick wide open threes. Like it's just,
Yeah, 100%. I mean, that's really what it is. Like Jalen Williams had 10 rebounds. He had 9 defensive rebounds and not a single player on the Wolves matched that. I mean, Ant had 7. He had 9 rebounds for the game. Rudy had 9 rebounds, man, and 5 of them were defensive. I mean,
yeah, just not that, that, 5 that, defensive rebounds is just
there it is.
Not
like,
good enough.
Like right there, you have to, if you're Rudy Gobert, I'm like in this series, like you have to have 10 defensive rebounds. You have to end a possession if you are Rudy Gobert 10 times. And I get that that's difficult. I get that that's a hard thing. But you're Rudy Gobert, man. Like you're one of the best defensive players of this entire generation of basketball players. You have to find a way to end possessions by yourself in these series and be able to stand out. And you have 5 defensive rebounds out of your 9. Granted, biological process of elimination, 4 of those are offensive. But I mean, like again, like let's go down Oklahoma City. Like Hartenstein has 8, Dort has 8. Shea has, I mean, 3, but again, all 3 of them are defensive. Like they're gang rebounding. And then you go look at the Wolves. Like Gobert, 9, 5 of them defensive. Ant had 9, 7 of them were defensive. Fair enough. Nas had 8. 7 of those were defensive. I thought Nas was in position to get way more than 8 defensive rebounds or 7 defensive rebounds and 8 rebounds total. But those are your 3 highest rebound getters, man. Like you just that there's your game and there's your series. Frankly, if this is one that ends up going down as an Oklahoma City win rather convincingly, which I think this is, you know, frankly, where my mind is right now, I think that's kind of where we're headed. That's going to be the story, and that's not to take anything away from the Wolves season and how they've done and whatnot. You can clip this if the Wolves end up winning this in 6 or 7 or whatever it might be, but that's the series. I mean, you have to be able to control the glass. The Wolves learned it 3 years ago when they played Memphis. And if they have to learn it again when they play Oklahoma City, you know, maybe it helps team construction in the offseason and we see a little bit of a pivot. But I don't know, man. Like that's a problem. Rudy Gobert getting 9 boards and 5 of those being defensive is that's the game tonight, frankly, for me.
Yeah. Jaden McDaniels, 2 rebounds, 5 fouls. Both of those numbers are just incredibly telling with the type of game. I think people will see the 8 of 15. I don't think it was a good Jaden game, to be honest. Offensively, it was fine, but just wasn't impactful enough defensively. Let's talk about Ant here. Thought he was good, but before we dive into the game, he declined to speak to media, according to John Krasinski tonight, after getting fined $50,000 for the F-bomb the other night. I do want to talk about this a little bit. Because Ant's relationship with the media has been piss poor this entire season and maybe his entire career. Maybe people don't care. I certainly don't want to get up here and be self-righteous about Ant's biggest flaw is not talking to me. Like that, it's a bad look, but I don't know. I think him not talking to media after a playoff game is a big, he's skipped out on a lot of practice availabilities, specifically before the Golden State series. They had 3 straight practice days and he declined to speak all 3 days. That's a tough look. And I think him declining to speak after a playoff game is another, maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe it's just I do think that the $50,000 fine for the one single F-bomb, not as like the prominent part of a sentence, I think that was kind of crap by the NBA. I know they've made it very clear they're trying to get that out of his vernacular, and I get that. I thought that was, and so if that fine is the real reason, is really the main reason why he skipped and not the outcome of the game, then I guess I get that to a certain extent. But when Tyrese Haliburton, after which game of the game 3 of the Cleveland series, when they got blown out, Haliburton declined to speak to the media, and it became a whole story for locally there. From
he declined
multiple
to speak on both losses, actually, I believe. I think it was game 3, but I think it was another one too that he declined to speak, and that became a pretty big story.
It became a big story, at least locally. That there, people were talking about it over and over and over. They asked him at the practice the next day. They asked him at the post game after they won. He more or less said he regretted that decision. And I was kind of sitting there thinking, man, this is a lot different than what's going on in Minnesota, because Minnesota's best players declined to speak to the media a lot. And maybe that doesn't matter. Maybe people just don't care. And I kind of understand that and rather talk about the game. But I do think after a loss like this, it's a bit of a bad look. You look like a front runner. And I think you got to go up there and, if you want to go up there and know and like Marshawn Lynch the thing, I get it. If you want to go up there and be like, hey, I thought I'm just trying not to get fined and one word answer everything, that's great. But like, I think, let me get your thoughts. Do you care as someone who also occasionally gets to talk to Ant, or is this like I'm being too self-indulgent?
Yeah, I mean... I could go both ways on this. I think that I'll go where you're coming from, Ryan, because I think that's kind of where
you don't have to. You can
I think it's where I lean more, because I think that if you're the leader of this team and you're supposed to be, I mean, I get that he wants to kind of dodge the face of the league allegations, and that's fine. But you're for sure the face
narrative
of the Timberwolves.
Crap, whatever.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. I don't care about that. You're the face of the Timberwolves. And when you're down 0-2, you have to show some form of accountability for what's been happening. Whether it's your fault, whether it's your teammates' fault. You know, like, Rudy's... if Rudy was asked to talk tonight, he would do it. Did he? I don't know. Did he talk tonight? I haven't seen podium yet.
I haven't seen either.
If Rudy was asked to talk tonight, like, Rudy would do it. Like, Rudy is notoriously, like... pretty solid at talking to the media, even after he has a historically bad game, and He's someone who gets dragged on social media all the time. The accountability has to be there. And I get it. Like at this point in time, like, I guess the part of me that's maybe anti, and if I were to play devil's advocate, is like, it's going to roll some eyes, but he's still 23 years old. Like, he's learning the ropes of speaking to the media still. I mean, I get like 5 years in, like, you're like, okay, what? Like, what? He still is like, yeah, he is.
I get that. But if we're going to use that excuse, then wrap this thing up. The series, sure. The season is over. The series is done. They need their 23-year-old to act like a player in the prime of his career. That's sure. how this sure. is set
and,
up.
If
he's like, going to continue to act like a 23-year-old like that, the next season's toast. And like, we're so far. Like, I agree with your point. Like, but
that's the thing, Ryan. It's like,
fair
that's
or not, they
like,
need him to be more than that.
Is it building up to right now is like what I've been talking about for the last 20 minutes out of all these separate players. Like, this team might just not be ready yet. And we talked about this team going to the finals so many times. Like, the vibes are so good after the Lakers series, you know, the Golden State series set them up to be in the Western Conference finals where they could maybe make a run. Like, this team might just not be ready yet. They don't have the bench to maybe score and get to the finals yet. Like, you need to have a bench player that can get there. You need to have a leader that's accountable and speaks to the media as to what went wrong and what went right. Like, after every single game. And maybe they don't have that. Like, maybe they don't have any of those things. And, you know, frankly, like, at this point, like, it may disappoint a lot of people to hear that. And I wouldn't blame you for being disappointed after hearing that. But it might just be like a very harsh truth at this point. And I'm with you. I think like it all three times you declined to speak. Yeah, that's garbage. I think like one of those three times, like, I wouldn't be as disappointed about that. Like, you speak one of those three times that you're maybe requested to.
But like
tonight, for sure, you go down 0-2, you have to. Like, you go down 0-2 in the Thunder series, like, and you decline, you have to speak. You just do.
With the practice thing, no one gets requested like 2 days in a row. If they have three straight practice days, the writers make sure to, like, because we don't want to talk to anyone 2 days right. in a row other than Finch. And to be honest, you can start to see their questions wear thin when you've talked to the same guy 3 days in a row without an actual game.
Well, but that's what I'm saying. It's just like agree to one of those times. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. if you're like your second day in a row, like your third day in a row, like, agree to it once, you know, like, just do it and get it done with. And especially if you go down 0-2, you just have to do it. I mean, you're a leader of a team. I understand that it's not ideal circumstances. You had the thing come out. I think it was Mark Spears that reported like you were up till 3 a.m. the night before looking at film. All that stuff gets out for a reason, and you just have to you have to answer for what your team is doing. You have to be accountable for your whole team. Like, that's part of this thing. And, you know, again, like, if he doesn't do it, like, I don't have as much of an issue with it. I think for me, that kind of like that solders the fact that this team just might not be ready. And that's okay. You made back-to-back conference finals. They'll grow from it. They'll learn from it. But it shows to me, like, from the top down, like, just maybe need a little bit more time.
Yeah. I mean, just think, like, would LeBron ever skip media? That seems unlikely. Would Halliburton? He did, I guess. But, like, I'm trying to think of Curry would never skip media. Like, these are the type of players he looked. Durant is won the media good guy award that they gave out. I don't know. I'm willing to move off it just because I really think people don't, like, the average fan doesn't care. I think it hurts them because you don't get, like, you don't get the quotes, you don't get what the player is thinking. Like, we all read and listen, a lot of people, and people's coverage suffers because of stuff like this. But I think, like, on the surface level, I think people just, like, kind of don't care.
He did go after game one, and I would give him credit for that. But I would point to the person who's three lockers down from him in the locker room, and Rudy, where, I mean, if there is somebody who has the right to decline to speak to the media on given nights, where he finishes with maybe 3 points, 2 rebounds, and gets in foul trouble and is dragged all over social media for his play on the floor that night. I mean, he talks every single time. There's never been a time where Rudy Gobert has declined to speak to the media. And I specifically recall an incredibly tough game. Maybe it was against Philadelphia in March. It was either a February or a March game where he was completely down in the dumps. Like, it was like a unbelievably bad game for him. He did a media availability for about 8 minutes. PR cut it off afterwards, and I was able to get a question in after, even after he cut it off and people had kind of moved off of him. And he sat there and he answered the question despite just being completely, you know, shut off after that game. And that, to me, for someone who's at this point been reduced to a role player, and we talked about a little bit of, is he around next year? Is he not? Like, we'll see. But that's like, that's a professional player. Like, that's someone who, like, for as much shit as he takes for his political views, like, whatever it might be, like, and I would likely agree with you on a lot of those things. But it's when you're a professional basketball player and you are asked to, and you are requested for media availability, he's someone who has a lot of rights to say, no, I don't want to talk to you guys tonight. Like, this is kind of bullshit. I feel like Ant is less so. And especially too, as someone who is going to be here for at minimum another 4 years. Just go to the podium. Answer for your team. What went wrong? What went right?
Don't answer. Just go and say, show face. Give one word answer.
Show face. But be a leader. Yeah, lead the team. It's what they need right now. You know, in the public eye and in the locker room. Like, lead the team. And if you're not ready for that at this point in time, that's fine. You know, you'll be back, I would imagine, at some point very soon. But to me, that, like, it's just kind of a microcosm at this point in time of, you know, perhaps that signals that this team just isn't quite there yet, and that's okay.
Yep. On the court, though, my kind of analysis of his game is I thought he played fairly well. If you'd have told me he had 32 points on 26 shots with 9 rebounds, 6 assists, no turnovers, I would have assumed the Wolves had a pretty darn good chance of winning that game. So I thought he played well, and I also weirdly thought they just kind of need more from him on the court. And I kind of think that's almost a little bit unfair to put that on any player's shoulders. But ultimately, he's getting outplayed by Shea, and I just think that it's got to be at least even between those two players, if not Ant outplaying him for the win this series. And maybe given the state of each defense, that's unfair to expect of Ant, but I also just kind of think if that is unfair to expect of him, they're going to lose this series. So
he's getting outplayed by Shea, but I think as of right now, where I would lean is this has been a battle and decisive win for Oklahoma City in the front court and on the bench. And you know, as much as we want to make it about Shea and Ant, like, Shea has been good. Like, the fouls, like, fouls are easy to complain about.
He was good tonight, despite the
does not matter tonight. Like, tonight did not matter about the whistle. Like, I don't care.
Let me check how many free throws. He had 6 free throws before the game got out of hand. So it wasn't.
I don't care about the whistle tonight. Like, tonight is completely. Like, I don't care about the whistle tonight.
The annoying fouls happened after the game was over.
Game honestly. One, for sure. And game one is like, game one, sure, annoying fouls happened. It would have maybe brought the game from 20 to 10 at some points. But, like, let's stop with that. At this point in time, the Thunder have played better. Their benches played better. Their benches showed up. Kenrich Williams played better in game one than any of the Wolves bench players. That should say plenty.
Oh, I knew they were losing that game when Kenrich Williams hit a contested 2. I'm like, okay. Well,
yeah, exactly. I think what the Thunder bench went 10 of 16 from 3. I think that was the final number from game one. The bench has been better. Their front court's been better. And that's it. Like, that's the story of this series. And the front court is the Wolves' strong suit. You have 3 guys who should be elite at what they do, who can dynamically start and close games, depending on what the game needs. That needs to be your strong suit. If the game is faster against a team like Oklahoma City, you should be able to be elite with Nas and Julius in your front court and hit shots and play good enough defense to be able to outscore them. If it's a more set game, if it's a more set defensive game, you should be able to put Rudy in there and you should be able to close games out with your defense. That has not happened. It just has not happened. And between the first 2 series, you were able to do that, and you were able to, because of that, get by with bad performances from your bench, but you now cannot have both, especially against a team like Oklahoma City, who, like you, is 1-8 strong. And that's what's happened, unfortunately. Fortunately or unfortunately, that's what's happened. And they've been outplayed in the front court and back court. And Shea, like, it is what it is. And Shea was unbelievable for especially the first three quarters. I think he was the one who kind of staved off the Wolves when they would try to make a run. Mm-hmm. But it's the bench in the front court. That's the story of the series. And depending on whatever way it goes, if the tides turn and the Wolves win in seven, great. It will be because of the front court and the bench. It will not be because of Ant.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of interesting, like, big picture thoughts about this series, this game, this playoff run, but I kind of want to hold off on that until the series is actually over or the Wolves season is actually over, because we're going to have months to break that down. And I do think that there's still some, I think there's a good chance that there's a lot of fun basketball left in the series. I do think the Wolves have a chance. It is slim. It is unlikely. And it will probably require a bit of, if you want to call it luck, or the other team playing poorly, or, and it's certainly going to start with just like making shots and playing better, which should hopefully happen at Target Center. I don't think it's impossible that they could win the next two in a row. Coming down from 3-1, if they do split the two home games, seems unlikely. It would be very Wolves to split the home games, win game five, and then lose in six. That feels very Wolvesy. But I put, especially because, like, I want to see what the home games look like, or at least one of them, before we really, like, start putting on our black clothing for a funeral here.
The black pants are on. I'll put it that way. The black pants are on. The shirt and the hood are off for now. But I've started to put the clothing on a little bit.
Yeah.
I haven't liked what I've seen the first two games. And the other thing too is, like, can we talk? How much have you talked about Mike Conley before I jumped on?
Yeah, I did mention. I might mention him. Like, they are just not running good offense without him on the court. They get outscored by 29 with him on
plus
the bench.
Plus 14 tonight. The only player on the Wolves team in the plus, and he's plus 14. And also too, I think I saw Dane's tweet where it was like they're plus 17 with him on the floor and minus 59 with him off.
Oof. Yeah. But the thing was OKC's also attacking him on defense, and that's kind of happened all year with good teams that are actually trying to win basketball games. Where with Mike and Rudy, it kind of feels like with Rudy, they can't score with him on, but can't defend with him off. And Mike is kind of the inverse, where their defense suffers with him on the court, but he's such a big piece of their offense. And during the regular season, I think that dynamic, like, balances each other out, where Mike or Rudy covers up for some of the Mike defense stuff, and Mike is able to help the offense even with Rudy on the court. And what this series has felt like is the opposite, where both of the negatives are outweighing each other's positive, where they're not really able to score well enough because of Rudy, and they're still getting killed defensively, not because of Mike, but you theoretically would be better off with defensively with, like, Nikhil or Dante. So
yeah. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. But it's still interesting, though. I mean, it was a decisively minus game for everybody in the Wolves rotation except for Mike, who finished with a plus 14.
Yeah, and I think
plus minus can be deceiving. I'm with you that I think, you know, Oklahoma City did a nice job attacking him defensively. I think especially, like, dragging him into the paint and getting him in uncomfortable situations. At least Jalen Williams was specifically one who kind of put him on an island when he was switched onto him. But at the end of the day, like, Mike Conley was the safety blanket during the regular season. He was not the organizer. Like, he's an organizer. He was a safety blanket during the regular season, but the offense didn't die with him off the, like, it wasn't completely dead off the floor. And so what this coaching staff needs to do between game two and game three is figure out, What was Mike doing? Like, what were the actions that were being run with Mike on the floor that were successful? Because I do think that, like, The Wolves have found success with Dante and Nikhil bringing the ball up the floor and just initiating actions and initiating sets. Like, what can you find that can get you into successful positions to get open shots? Because at the end of the day, if you can get open shots, go down with the ship and shoot the basketball.
Yeah, that was my biggest takeaway from game one. People were like, and I think they did do a better job of getting in the paint. But as far as like shot choice, I don't think like reducing the number of threes is when they're open. That's not, I thought Ant pumped out of a couple threes that I would have liked to see him take, even with him being one of nine. I don't care that
shoot
if you're
rock.
One of nine.
Shoot the rock. Nine.
A late contest three from the corner is a good shot. Put it up.
You're all NBA players. You're all NBA basketball players. You all can shoot threes at a proficient level.
And if they were favorites, maybe like having shooting this many threes and playing the variance game would be bad. But like, if you're underdog, you want the high variance stuff is going to pull you closer to 50-50. Like, I don't know. I would keep shooting it. That's my, if they're open.
I thought
almost all of them were either open or ones you want to take. Before we close, let's think about what, if the Wolves are going to find success in this series, what is like one big change that they can do? Because I don't think like trying to fiddle on the margins is going to be enough. And my biggest thing would be hard double Shea, like you did in that one crazy comeback, make others beat you. And there's a likely chance or probable chance that they just do.
Well, that was successful for a period tonight when they hard doubled Shea late in the game. There was
and
success
then,
there.
With a couple minutes left, Jalen Williams hit an open three and that ended the game. And so I just think, especially at Target Center where role players on the road tend to perform lesser, I would be hard doubling Shea, get it out of his hands. And if the back, and this is going to require better defense than we saw tonight to have rotations that are on point. But if they're going to hit, if the Lu Dorts, the Holmgrens from outside, those type, if they're going to hit open threes, then you're probably just toast.
That's it.
To me, you don't have anything left to lose. It's kind of like a baseball analogy. I always get frustrated when there's a walk in the ninth inning when you're up by more than one run where a home run doesn't really hurt you. It's like, throw it down the middle. And I think that, to me, doubling Shea is like the throw it down the middle. You're already, like, you got nothing to lose. You can't have a walk. Like, let's try to, it's like you're... Yeah, you know they're going to hit it, but just hope the line drive goes right at the left fielder or whatever. Like that'd be my adjustment I would want to see him make.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think that hard doubling Shea is again, like we said, it's like late in the game it worked. Like it actually did. Like it generated some misses, it generated a couple mm-hmm. turnovers there. Like it's not like that's a completely lost cause. So I'm with you on that. I think for me, like, I would give up some transition points if it meant more crashing of the glass. I think that you need, like, you have had 2 weeks of rebounding performances so far mm-hmm. in this series to continue to do what you are doing. I think Oklahoma City tonight, let me look at the game chart real quick. I mean, you had a weak rebounding performance and your fast break points were 16-9. If your fast break points next game, and I know that it's iffy on fast break points in general, like what is that as a stat? But if fast break points were 20-9 next game, but you're able to generate, you know, 10 offense or 10 rebounds for multiple people on the team, I think that's a win. I think ultimately that's a profitable thing. But right now you're stuck in the middle and you have multiple people crashing the glass and then Oklahoma City is getting out and running and getting some pretty easy buckets. So if you have intentional, like three intentional people crashing the glass with two people getting back in transition, I think that can be pretty profitable. I think at this point in time, spare yourself on the glass and allow fast break points if you really need to, and take your chances and roll the dice there. But you just have to rebound better. You cannot keep rebounding like this and expect, I mean, you're going to get swept if you keep rebounding like this, frankly, in my mind. It's been abysmal these first two games.
Yep. Pretty much what I came in here saying is the Wolves are getting outplayed in almost every single category across the stat sheet. So they gotta do something and
play better.
Rebounding's one, free throws, shooting the ball, just something.
Play better. That's what you come to this podcast for, the groundbreaking analysis. Play better.
Yeah. Well, Andrew and I will be back on Saturday night, one or both of us on the live stream at Target Center. We're hoping it's not, like we said, we got our, like, to continue the broken analogy further. Like, I've put on the white t-shirt, which goes with, you know, like, I can put on a dress shirt over top of it, or I've got the hoodie in the back of the car to throw over the white t-shirt, too, if we're going to still party here. But we'll see what game three holds. It'll be a big one if you win. You got a chance to bring this series back. Even if you lose, we're hoping to be the 0-4 Red Sox at that point. But yeah, thanks for joining me, Andrew. I know you you had your own personal life tonight, but I appreciate you rushing home for me. And we'll see everyone Saturday night.
Wouldn't miss it, Ryan.
Go Wolves.
Ayo!
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.